Good afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, June 28th, 2014. I'm Harley Schlanger and I will be your host. On Tuesday, June 24th, Lyndon LaRouche issued a statement under the heading, Hillary Clinton's Benghazi revelations mean Obama must be impeached immediately. And it starts with Mr. LaRouche saying that demanding that the House of Representatives launch immediate impeachment proceedings against Barack Obama based on the account of the president's lying cover-up of the terrorist attack in Benghazi, Libya. Now, there's obviously a lot more than simply the Benghazi case, but that's a very important example of the pattern of lawlessness and constitutional violations of this president. Yesterday, in an interview with the Voice of Russia, Mr. LaRouche discussed this again and made the extremely important point that, as he said, and I'll just quote him, we're on the verge, if we don't get Obama out of office now, I can guarantee you, virtually guarantee you, that we're headed for thermonuclear war. The only way the thing will prevent thermonuclear war from being pushed would be impeachment, because Obama, as long as he has the power, will push thermonuclear war. He's referring to, of course, the most recent developments in Iraq as well as Ukraine, with the U.S. and the British and NATO conducting operations, illegal operations, that go against our Constitution, but that are de facto threats that are forcing the Russians into a position which doesn't have to happen, which is moving toward thermonuclear confrontation. Now, to make it clear that this is not just something that's on Mr. LaRouche's agenda, we've seen a discussion of impeachment spread throughout politics and political discussion in recent days. For example, yesterday, and the reason that Mr. LaRouche was interviewed by Voice of Russia was for his opinion on the lawsuit that, Speaker of the House John Boehner threatened to file to try to force Obama to abide by the Constitution. Now, we're going to be discussing this because under our Constitution, the proper legal remedy for this is to take it to the U.S. Congress for an impeachment bill in the House and for the Senate to a trial. Now, on the issue of impeachment, just in terms of the broad picture before we get to our guests, this is something that Mr. LaRouche has insisted is necessary for quite a while. And what we're seeing now is events are catching up with what Mr. LaRouche had forecast. That we see with Ukraine and Iraq a pattern of activity which has been going on since virtually the beginning of this administration. Now, what added to this in the last days was the publication of a book, Blood Feud, by Ed Klein, which recounts the conversation on September 11th, 2012, between President Obama and Hillary Clinton, in which Obama ordered Hillary Clinton to lie about the events on that occurred in Benghazi, that were occurring in Benghazi, and he suborned perjury from her. And we'll be discussing that especially in the second half of this program. But what I'd like to do now is bring in our guests. We have with us one of the most significant legal experts on this question on the planet, Professor Francis Boyle from the University of Illinois Law School. Professor Boyle is a renowned fighter for human rights. He has a very, very long resume. It could take up the whole hour just to read his resume. But he's been involved in international court cases representing victims of genocide. He's written many books and articles, and he's been involved in attempting to protect the Constitution and protect the country, which includes the right to impeach presidents who violate the Constitution. And so we'll be speaking with him, and also joining us today will be Jeffrey Steinberg, the counterintelligence editor of the Executive Intelligence Review, and someone who's very active in Washington and nationally in bringing this case forward. So, Professor Boyle, welcome to our program.
Well, thank you very much, Harley, for having me on again, and my best to your listening audience.
Well, I'd like to start with the obvious question, which is for you to delineate what is the basis for an impeachment of President Obama right now?
Well, it would be the same as any other president. I work with the late, great Congressman Henry B. Gonzalez on his bill of impeachment against President Bush Sr. for his war against Iraq, and I was counsel to him and did the first draft on that. And basically, it is conduct that subverts the Constitution. So it's just not enough for there to be maladministration or incompetence, although legally and constitutionally. Now, I guess technically, you know, the House can impeach a president for whatever they want. In the case of President Clinton, he was impeached for fellatio and lying about fellatio, as opposed to many of the bombing campaigns he engaged in. But in any event, technically, it should be for conduct that subverts the Constitution. Now, under the current dire circumstances, I don't think we have time to deal with all of the conduct that President Obama has engaged in that subverts the Constitution. We are in a very serious, dangerous, near cataclysmic situation, both with respect to Russia over Ukraine, and then the disintegration of Iraq and Syria as states, setting off a general Middle East war that also could pull in Russia and has already pulled in Iran. So I would recommend for any member of the House of Representatives considering a bill of impeachment, and I am working, I'm willing to serve as counsel free of charge to any member of the House, as I did to Congressman Gonzalez, to consider a silver bullet approach to impeachment. Namely, I don't believe we have time here for hearings, as happened with Nixon. World War III could break out very soon at any time here if Obama keeps moving the way he is. So what I think we need are articles of impeachment that are clear-cut, slam dunk, with no need for hearings. Indeed, there is a special procedure under the rules of the House of Representatives that any member of the House can get up and simply impeach the president verbally on the floor of the House.
Francis, you're saying that just one congressman could initiate this?
Or congresswoman, that's correct. One member of the House of Representatives can do that. You can check the rules of the House of Representatives. They can get up. They can orally impeach right there on the floor of the House. And then since the Republicans control the House, they could move to an immediate vote without hearings. All that can be done under the House rules, assuming the Speaker of the House, Boehner, is willing to go along with it. And that would be my recommendation now, given the severity of the situation. I also wanted to point out, of course, that Obama is threatening war against China, too, which is a very serious issue, and is encouraging Japan. But let me go through then two articles of impeachment in a bill, or oral impeachment, that are undeniable and slam dunk. First, clearly, Obama's unconstitutional war against Libya that violated the War Powers Clause of the Constitution and the War Powers Resolution of 1973. And Obama even sent up his lawyer, Harold Coe, now back teaching at the Yale Law School with the other war criminals on that faculty, to justify it. And his justification, even Speaker the Boehner said, did not pass the straight face test, and that's correct. It goes so bad. He wrote the legal justification for Reagan's invasion of Grenada back when he worked for Reagan. That's what a bad lawyer and how instrumentalist and opportunist he is. But even Speaker of the House Boehner said that that argument did not pass the straight test.
And what was that argument that they put forward?
Well, I'm not going to waste my time here. It's a joke.
Okay.
Boehner said it did not pass the straight face test,
okay.
And I agree with him. And there were already extensive hearings on this matter, so we don't need more hearings on that matter. Second, is the murder of United States citizens. Right now, Obama has ordered the murder of 4 United States citizens whom we know of. And there is a 5th U.S. citizen on his murder list now. Obama has already ordered him to be murdered, and they're trying to track him down now somewhere between Pakistan and Afghanistan. The murder of U.S. citizens clearly violates this summary murder, the 5th Amendment to the United States Constitution, and the 6th Amendment to the United States Constitution, the first guaranteeing due process of law that no one shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, and the 6th Amendment dealing with criminal prosecutions. Now, both cases, both those articles of impeachment, there is ample official documentation in the public record. U.S. Court in New York just released the memorandum justifying the murders of U.S. citizens by David Barron, working for Obama, who at that time was on the faculty of the Harvard Law School, my dis alma mater, along with other war criminals there on that faculty. It just came out. There's 100 pages. I haven't read it all. But I did read the white paper that had been previously released that summarized the arguments. It is clear if you read the white paper on which the which is based on the bigger memorandum, that this memo by Barron, and it was co-authored by Marty Lederman, who's now returned to Georgetown Law School, and they have some war criminals on that faculty too. Indeed, when Georgetown wanted to hire me, the dean then insisted that I first go work for the State Department right after the Vietnam War, and of course I refused. But in any event, this memorandum clearly was never drafted in good faith. Rather, it was drafted by Barron and Lederman to give Obama so-called legal cover that basically Obama could say, well, my lawyers told me I could do it, so I did it, and that means it isn't criminal. It isn't a felony. In fact, there's a special U.S. statute, putting aside the murder statute, there is a special U.S. statute on murdering U.S. citizens abroad that was enacted by Congress after Leon Klinghoffer was murdered, and it turned out there was no statute to deal with that issue. So it's clear at a minimum that that statute was violated. And the memorandum, however, then, is simply designed to enable Obama to murder U.S. citizens not only abroad, but even here in the United States. Attorney General Holder, in a letter to Senator Paul, and also Brennan, the CIA director, have both taken the position that President Obama can, likewise, pursuant to the Barron Memorandum, murder United States citizens, even here in the United States. Now, this memorandum by Barron, and there are others that have not yet been released, is similar in purpose to the memorandum, the legal opinion done by Jay Bybee when he headed the same office in the Department of Justice for President Bush, and wrote an opinion letter that basically enabled the entire torture scandal. The whole purpose there was basically to get to give Bush and the rest of them a get-out-of-jail-free card, being able to say, well, the government's official legal branch said I could do it, so I did it, and therefore it was not illegal. And Bush Jr. paid off Bybee by appointing him to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals out there on the West Coast. Obama, just like Bush Jr., paid off Barron by appointing him to the First Circuit Court of Appeals out in Boston, where I'm licensed to practice law, and there to warm the seat for an appointment to the United States Supreme Court. It's a feeder court. Justice Breyer went from Harvard Law School, like Barron, to the First Circuit, to the U.S. Supreme Court. The difference, of course, between Bush and Obama are twofold. One, Bush, not to excuse him, never arrogated to himself openly and publicly the alleged right to murder U.S. citizens, as Obama has done. And number two, Obama, unlike Bush, is a lawyer. He was behind me at Harvard Law School. He was taught constitutional law by Larry Tribe, and the late, great Paul Freund taught constitutional law both to Tribe and me. So that's the pedigree there. Obama knows that this is clearly illegal and criminal and unconstitutional activity. So, Harley, you know, we only have half an hour here. You know, and we could discuss other matters if you want, but I think those two articles in a bill of impeachment, even orally, are incontestable. They do not require hearings to stall and delay everything. Basically, that's what Speaker of the House Boehner's announced lawsuit is all about. On a positive side, it indicates that a lot of massive pressure has been applied upon Boehner by House Republicans to impeach the president. But as Boehner said, well, I'm doing this lawsuit. I'm not going to impeach him. And really, Boehner is just kicking the can down the road. He said, well, sometime in July, I'm going to introduce legislation that will authorize the lawsuit. Well, he could certainly introduce legislation, a bill of impeachment, and get the whole thing taken care of immediately if he wanted to. But second, all constitutional lawyers know that at the end of the day, this lawsuit is going to be knocked out of court. I'm not going to go through all the grounds here, but it will be knocked out on standing, the Raines decision by the U.S. Supreme Court, and also the political question doctrine. So everyone knows this. Now, Speaker of the House Boehner is not a lawyer, but he has some very sharp lawyers there advising him, and he knows full well that nothing is going to come of this lawsuit. So he's just trying to postpone and stall and delay and stave off the demand for immediate impeachment of President Obama.
Well, let me ask you a couple of other questions here, Francis, because your time is short. And I just want to identify for our listeners, you're listening to Francis Boyle, a legal expert who has a great deal of experience in dealing with these kinds of questions of constitutional law, what's legal in international relations. And I'd like to ask you, I think what you're saying is extremely important about the urgency, given that we're about to see, at least the president has indicated, that he's not going to go to the Congress before he acts in Iraq. There's evidence that comes out that from the Defense Intelligence Agency and others that this situation that seems to have happened suddenly has been unfolding for a long period of time with the full knowledge of the president and key people on his staff. Is there something that can be done to preempt? I mean, would you say that the oral presentation is the best way to preempt the president from getting us into another war.
Well, I think you are certainly correct that Obama knew full well what was going to happen here in Iraq and also Syria. Indeed, the game plan has always been to basically disintegrate Iraq as a state. And that's really what's going on here, and Obama knows all about it. Technically, constitutionally, he is already in violation of the War Powers resolution. He sent 300 special forces over there, which he admitted are equipped for combat. And the War Powers resolution gets triggered whenever U.S. forces are sent, quote, into the territory, airspace, or waters of a foreign nation while equipped for combat, unquote. And he is currently positioning them for combat. The administration officials have already said they are going to start bombing Syria and in Syria and in Iraq. And it appears that at least half of these special forces are slated to become forward air controllers for any bombing campaign. We already have, they already have armed Predator drones over there now in the skies of Baghdad. So Obama is already in violation of the War Powers Resolution now as we speak. And indeed, that's why the War Powers Resolution was put in there, to deal with another Vietnam that started out with President Kennedy sending in special forces, Green Berets.
Advisors.
And then it gradually escalated from there. So Obama is already in violation of the War Powers Resolution on Iraq. But the problem here, Harley, as I see it, is that these issues here that I'm raising now have not been addressed by Congress or in the public record. There would probably be a demand for hearings on them, like on Libya, and that would postpone everything. So in my opinion, to stop Obama bombing Iraq, bombing Syria, and provoking Russia to invade Ukraine, which could happen soon, as you know, President Putin just ordered all his troops to stand down, withdraw. He rescinded the resolution giving him authority to invade Iraq by the Ukraine by the Russian Duma. He's recognizing Poroshenko as the president, and now as we speak today, the Obama administration just issued an ultimatum that if he doesn't cease and desist and basically convince the insurrectionists there to surrender, comprehensive economic sanctions will be adopted against Russia on Monday. That deadline, I just read the article on the Financial Times. Obama has the EU on board for comprehensive sector economic sanctions against Russia on Monday with a fixed deadline. So it is clear, again, likewise in Ukraine, where Obama and Nuland, the neocon who used to work for Cheney, orchestrated a neo-Nazi coup d'etat against a democratically elected government in Ukraine. And we now have Obama and Nuland and the U.S. government working with neo-Nazis in Ukraine and literally threatening Russia. And we now have border skirmishes between over the Russian-Ukraine border, which has never been legally demarcated since the collapse of the Soviet Union.
So what you just described just adds to the necessity for some immediate action in the House. Jeff, I think you wanted to ask a question or say something.
Yes, Francis, I'd like you to just take our audience through the fastest possible steps. You've mentioned either a written or an oral bill of impeachment on two basically slam dunk issues. Are you suggesting that for example, when Congress comes back after the 4th of July recess, that the House could go into immediate grand jury proceedings with the full House? How would that work precisely?
I think, well, Jeff, what's happening now is, as you know, Congress has recess for the 4th of July holiday weekend period. I think when they go home, and not the senators, but the members of the House, they have to be personally buttonholed by their constituents. It's not enough to send an email. They'll be out there in their districts, and the constituents, they have to respond to their constituents, must go up and demand the immediate impeachment of President Obama. Now, I'm standing by here to help draft articles of impeachment if I get instructions from a member of the House. We could draft these articles of impeachment and have them ready when the House reconvenes. And when the House reconvenes, the bill should be put in, the bill of impeachment on these two articles. There should be a debate and a vote. I believe the counts are already there to impeach the president. You had a Republican member of Congress say this openly. And then ship it off to the Senate for a trial. Now, of course, the Senate is controlled by the Democrats. You need a two-thirds vote for conviction. I can't predict what will happen there in the Senate, but I think even a lot of the Democratic senators are completely disillusioned with Obama. Many don't want to see another war. Others might decide that Joe Biden would be a more responsible figure as president than Obama. I can't say. But the other thing we know from previous impeachment efforts, especially the first president, Johnson, is that, you know, when things go to the Senate, anything can happen. The whole thing becomes completely volatile. And I think that what this would do is force Obama to back down, that he would be realizing that if he continues on with attacking Iraq and Syria, provoking a war, confrontation, a Cuban Missile Crisis with Russia, that he very well could be convicted in the Senate right away. So I think sending this off to the Senate immediately would mean Obama's dead in the water. He would have to spend full time preparing his defense in the Senate. And that would give us, whatever the result were, would give us time, the de-escalation of these crises. And even if Obama is not convicted in the Senate, and I'm not saying he would be, it would chasten him and force him to cool his jets, certainly, on the threatening Russia in Ukraine, promoting the collapse of Iraq and Syria, as he did to Libya, the disintegration of both of them, as he's done to Afghanistan, and also threatening China, which is very serious, this so-called pivot to Asia, right. The statement that the United States is prepared to go to war with China over a few rocks that Japan stole from China in the 1895 war of aggression that Japan waged against a weakened China. And that's just outrageous that Obama and Hegel would threaten war with China over these little pieces of rock. And in the meantime, Obama is enabling the militaristic Prime Minister Abe in Japan. And Abe's a direct descendant of a war criminal. The problem right. with Japan, after World War II, unlike in Germany, we never denazified Japan. General MacArthur decided to keep them all in power, and they're still there today. And Abe is their leading representative, and we are enabling Abe in this confrontation with China. So we have three major geopolitical hotspots right now as we speak. Three separate tinderboxes that Obama has deliberately moved us into. And a spark like what happened 100 years ago today in Sarajevo could set off any one of them.
I'd like to just ask you real quick, just to buttress the points that you've made over the last 30 minutes. In the case of Richard Nixon, at a certain point, leading figures within his own party concluded that he had to go. In some cases, it was for partisan reasons. In other cases, it was putting the issue of the survival of the country over the party. And you had, I'm sure you're familiar with the fact that a delegation of leading, in that case, Republicans, Barry Goldwater, Hugh Scott, I think that Howard Baker was somehow involved, went to Nixon and gave him basically the option of resigning or facing a virtual certainty of conviction in a trial in the Senate. And it strikes me that there is a nascent Democratic revolt against Obama and what he's done to the country and the party. And as you emphasize, the uncertainty of what would happen in a Senate trial. Do you see the possibility of a Nixon option for Obama, namely resign as an alternative to being actually convicted in a Senate trial after a virtually certain bill of indictment coming out of the House?
I think you're right, Jeff, that's an important precedent for you to bring out what happened with Nixon, that the power brokers in the Democratic Party could tell Obama he should leave and resign rather than face conviction in the Senate. But we're never going to get there unless we have a bill of impeachment in the House.
Absolutely
right. And the Republicans control the House. They could have impeached Obama already if they had wanted to, and
right.
long ago if they had wanted to, and they haven't. So we need to, you know, build a fire under their feet. And especially when they go back into their districts now,
right,
over the 4th of July weekend, they need to be buttonholed and talked to.
And Francis, all of our listeners should take what you've said and use this to take to their congressional offices. You don't have to set up an appointment. Just go into the office, find out where they're going to be. A lot of them are going to be campaigning. And I think the point you're making is that if they get a sense that the population has had it with war, with violations of the Constitution, with illegality, if they get a sense that there's that burning sentiment in the population, we may have the conditions where your proposal will be taken up, hopefully within the next couple of weeks, because the situation is dire indeed, as you've delineated it. So, Francis, I know your time is up, and I'd like to thank you very much for joining us and giving us this report. Do you have any final comments?
Well, again, I simply cannot underestimate the severity of the situation, especially in Ukraine, especially China, and now the Middle East. 100 years ago today, one assassination led to the deaths of 10 million human beings. Well, anything could happen in either one of those three locales because of Obama that could lead to the deaths of hundreds of millions of human beings, because Russia is nuclear-armed and China is nuclear-armed. So the stakes here are far higher than anything we have confronted before, and I think people have to understand that.
Okay, well, thank you very much. This has been very useful for our listeners, and I think we'll make sure that your offer, I know your offer to provide counsel is generally known in Congress. We'll make sure that everyone knows it.
All right, great. Yes, I'll be standing by, and especially if I hear from a member of the Congress between now and over the 4th of July break, I'd be happy to work with him or her.
Look forward to seeing you in Washington, in that case, very soon.
Well, let's hope so, right?
Absolutely.
All right.
All right, Francis. Thank you very much.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
So, Jeff, I think the case, as he said, is a slam dunk. What I'd like to do now in the time we have remaining is take up this immediate question of the report from the Ed Klein Blood Feud book and the implications of that, that we now have on the highest authority, not just emails from an assistant to the president, but from insiders, that Obama, in fact, did command that a lie be put out about what happened in Benghazi. So I'd like you to just review that situation. And there is, of course, a special committee that's been impaneled, but as Francis Boyle was saying, we don't really have time for a long, drawn-out process. So give us a sense of what you have from the Klein book.
Well, I think that there's two aspects that are both critically important to be factored in here. Number one, if you go back a couple of weeks, it was the long overdue release of a White House email between Ben Rhodes and Susan Rice,
right,
prepping her for her now notorious TV appearances on September 16th, where she peddled the lie about spontaneous demonstrations protesting a video about the Prophet Muhammad, rather than a premeditated Al-Qaeda 9/11 attack. That memo was the first smoking gun evidence that the White House played a leading role in promulgating the lie. And in fact, that was the tipping point that forced Speaker Boehner to lift his block on convening a select committee. Remember that Congressman Frank Wolf had almost all of the House Republicans on board demanding that a select committee be appointed to do a comprehensive investigation. So now, with the revelations in the Klein book coming directly from lawyers for Hillary Clinton, that she received a phone call 10 p.m. on the night of September 11th, 2012, from President Obama, ordering her to issue a press release, which she did 30 minutes later. It's all in the public record, basically putting out the false story that Susan Rice picked up several days later. This now means that President Obama personally is in the target zone for this investigation. It's no longer a matter of speculation that the president was in the middle of the decision to lie to the American people as these events were unfolding and to try to stick to that lie. Remember, this was 2 months before the presidential election. Mm-hmm. The president's poll numbers were collapsing. One of his biggest campaign issues was that he had ended the war on terrorism by defeating Al-Qaeda with the assassination of Osama bin Laden. And this incident clearly showed that it was one of those George Bush moments on the deck of the USS Lincoln, claiming that victory was at hand when, in fact, nothing of the kind had happened.
Right.
So we're in a situation right now where Congressman Trent Gowdy is conducting, he's leading the independent, select committee investigation. They have lawyers, they have staff investigators, they have subpoena power. It is now a virtual certainty that Secretary Clinton will be called to testify and that this question will come up. She could come out publicly and make a statement confirming the accuracy of the Klein book, since we know the information itself came from Clinton circles, or she could choose to wait to deliver testimony under oath before the Gowdy Select Committee.
Jeff, but so far there's been nothing from her to, since this book is public, I guess it was over a week ago, this excerpt appeared in the New York Post. there's been nothing from Hillary to deny it.
There's been nothing to deny it and no statement to officially, publicly confirm it. So that's sort of hanging in the air. But there's a second, I think, critical point, especially for our audience today, to bear in mind. And this goes back a little bit earlier, about 6 weeks ago, during one of his Friday evening webcasts, Lyndon LaRouche basically spelled out the only option for saving the Democratic Party in the United States, namely an alliance between LaRouche and the Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton wing of the Democratic Party to revive the party on the basis of an absolute break with Obama, Obama's removal from office, and the adoption of what LaRouche described as four cardinal laws that must be implemented to save the United States. Number one, reinstatement of Glass-Steagall. Number two, return to a Hamiltonian credit system where the commercial banks are under the supervision of the U.S. Treasury Department. In other words, a return to Hamiltonian national banking. Three, the emission of massive amounts of federal credit through that now re-regulated banking system for massive infrastructure and job creation programs. And number four, funding for an international crash program to achieve the breakthrough on thermonuclear fusion power, the energy source of the future. Now, we received certain signals back personally from Bill Clinton. He made a number of public statements at various events and interviews in which he talked about the destruction of the international financial system, in which he highlighted the cancerous growth and deregulation of derivatives. This was widely understood as a kind of a signal of a resumed dialogue between himself and Mr. LaRouche. And so that's the context in which to look at the appearance of the Ed Klein book, in which there is a definitive and irreversible break between the Clintons and Obama. Previously, there were a lot of games being played. There were a lot of deals that were being made between the Clintons and Obama. These deals were not worth the handshake that they were based on because it was a foregone conclusion that Obama had no intention of living up to those deals. But nevertheless, there was a certain amount of fudge factor that was leading inevitably to the destruction of the Democratic Party and the follow-on destruction of the United States if there wasn't a reversal. So I think the appearance of the Klein book, it did not come out in Hillary Clinton's own memoirs, but the appearance in the Klein book is a calculated move that represents the kind of decisive break that is urgently needed. And I think that Professor Boyle laid out a basically path of least resistance, fastest process for getting Obama out of office. And I think that we're in a situation right now where this break and this specific pointed allegation, statement, account, whatever you want to call it, by Hillary Clinton, of this 10 p.m. phone conversation on 9/11/12 means that there's a vehicle now for Democrats to break with Obama en masse. We've seen Senator Tim Kaine break with Obama very decisively this week on the issue of the fact that President Obama must go to Congress before taking any action in Iraq. By the way, there are some indications that I've received just in the last several hours that the alleged Syrian bombing on the Iraqi side of the border against ISIS positions may not have been Syria at all. It may have been U.S. drone strikes, and the allegations of the Syrian bombings are a cover of convenience because clearly if such an action was taken by the U.S., Obama is in total violation of Article 1, Section 8 and the War Powers Resolution.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, you know, what Professor Boyle laid out is right on the mark, the danger of thermonuclear war, the immediacy of the need for this process to go onto a fast track as soon as Congress returns. These things are very much complementary with developments we're seeing. Tim Kaine, who was Obama's college roommate and one of the first leading Democrats to endorse Obama for president back in 2008. Obama, in return, made him the chairman of the Democratic National Committee. So this is an institutional move representing the sentiment of a lot of Democrats that Senator Kaine is presenting.
Jeff, I think that the real issue on the Democratic Party side of things was made very clear with Keisha Rogers' campaign in Texas, where Keisha demonstrated that despite all the efforts of the Democratic Party to keep people from voting, that 3 out of 10 Democrats voted for the impeachment. But more importantly, the impeachment issue was put on the table for discussion. And if you then look at what you pointed out with Tim Kaine, but also you have Senator Blumenthal, you have Senator Manchin, you have Wyden of Oregon, Udall of Colorado, just as a few of many who are fighting with Obama on very important issues. And, you know, the idea that the Democratic Party is going to forever have Obama's back is missing the fact that not only is the Democratic Party in huge trouble, but as you and Professor Boyle have pointed out, the nation's in trouble. We're
exactly.
headed for war, and a war that could easily trigger thermonuclear exchanges. And so I think this is the context where LaRouche's call for an immediate impeachment and our organization's mobilization over this next week to make sure that the next 4 weeks when Congress is back in session, that this is the only thing on the agenda. Now, I just want to come back to another thing that I think is useful to make as a point, which is the role of Tony Blair and the fact that Blair is facing impeachment in England. And I'd like you to say something about that.
Well, you know, Blair has been running increasingly more and more desperate effort to cover up the findings of the Chilicot Commission, which basically places an enormous amount of blame squarely on Blair's shoulders for the Iraq war that has led precisely to this complete disintegration of Iraq and Syria and potentially that whole part of the Middle East. Blair, a couple of weeks ago, came out with your typical self-serving statement saying that now the United States once again had to intervene militarily to save Iraq and to completely disconnect himself from responsibility for the whole process of wars that led to this situation we're in right now with the ISIS and related insurgency right on the doorsteps of Baghdad. So Blair pissed a lot of people off with his sheer chutzpah in making these statements. And in response to that, a number of elected officials in Britain, members of the House of Commons and House of Lords, pointed out that there is a procedure for impeachment, even though Blair is no longer prime minister. And there is serious sentiment that that should happen. There's also been an open letter issued by a number of retired British ambassadors in the Middle East, including Blair's own ambassador to Iraq, basically saying that he should also be fired from his position as representative of the quartet, because 7 years on the job, the situation has only gotten worse, and he has at the same time profiteered enormously. They say he fails to distinguish between his job representing the quartet, which is the European Union, the U.S., Russia, and the United Nations Secretary General, and his other activities as a private consultant and as a consultant to J.P. Morgan Chase. So this guy is a walking criminal, a war criminal, and so some of these issues are finally coming home to roost. I think it's also
Jeff, it's both parties in the parliament, both the right. Labor and Tories, that have turned on him, and I think this is part of what you brought up in discussing with Professor Boyle, the insurgency that's emerging, not just in the United States against the two parties controlled by Wall Street, but that you have the same thing happening globally. And this is why the Mr. LaRouche is so insistent that we have something that goes beyond getting rid of Obama, that we have a policy for the post-Obama period, because the many nations in the world are looking to the United States to change its policy. So this really is one package of impeachment and then going ahead with these this four-point program.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, to just further underscore the point that you've made throughout this show, that it really does require an extraordinarily active and visible mobilization of the American population, and to use the occasion of Congress being back home in the districts. Very often when members of Congress are holed up in Washington, they lose contact with the real world. They lose contact with their constituents. We're in an election year. The weight of constituent pressure is enormously powerful. And this is the week. This is the moment of opportunity to give Congress an unambiguous, clear message to bring back to Washington right after the 4th of July recess. And I'm very happy that Francis Boyle spelled out the fastest, most direct and immediate course of action, and that course of action is what must be taken up and has to be pushed by constituents all over the country.
And this is where you see the biggest problem that we face, which, as you know, that Lynn has emphasized this repeatedly, the party system at this point is completely bankrupt. It's a one party controlled from the top. You had the case of Pelosi during the Bush-Cheney administration taking impeachment off the table for electoral opportunistic reasons. And we've seen Republicans do the same thing for hopes that they can win in 2014 midterms and then the 2016 election. And I think it's important to point out the crushing defeat suffered by Eric Cantor, who was one of the people, as I think, and you can correct me on this, but I think Cantor is one of the people who told Republicans, we're not going to bring a bill of impeachment against Obama.
Yes. Yes.
And so this is where you see how the one-party system functions.
Well, remember that the history of this goes back to the Bush-Cheney period. At the Schiller Institute conference in New York 2 weekends ago, Ray McGovern, 27-year CIA veteran, Soviet analyst, who's now become quite an important political activist, he was arrested in John Conyers' office when he refused to leave after Conyers told him back during the Bush-Cheney period that impeachment was off the table because Nancy Pelosi's decision was that it was better for the Democrats to leave Bush and Cheney in office and to opportunistically use them to achieve a midterm congressional victory on the road to taking back the presidency. This is not the way Congress is supposed to function. So you've had a rotten deal between the Democratic and Republican leadership to eliminate what was one of the most important powers given to Congress by the founding fathers, namely the power to remove a president from office for violating the Constitution.
And Jeff, on this, I think it really has to be highlighted. As Professor Boyle said, there are many, many possible cases, but he wanted to identify the two most urgent. But one of the most important principles, which is included in the violation of the War Powers Resolution, is the president's belief that he can act without consultation of Congress, without the system of checks and balances, that he is the supreme leader and therefore can do whatever he wants. And this is where the founding fathers incorporated impeachment as a process, precisely because they didn't want a king or an emperor who is unaccountable to the people.
That's right. And, you know, at the time, the founders were genuinely convinced that there would be a presidential impeachment at least once every generation. They understood that the power of the presidency, even with the elaborate checks and balances, was so great that the temptation to become a dictator or an oligarch or a monarch would be great. And that's why the three key powers that were given to Congress, power to declare war, power to control the purse, only Congress can authorize the issuance of credit, and thirdly, the power to impeach. These are three enormously important and powerful tools in the hands of Congress, and Congress has basically abandoned all three of them to a greater and greater degree the more that we've gone into the last 30 years, really since the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah, and that's also the importance of the power to do much of this is with the House of Representatives, which has to stand for office every 2 years.
Correct.
Which technically makes it more responsive to the constituents, to the voters, to the citizens.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as we're coming up on the July 4th weekend, it would be crucial for people to go back to the Constitution, read it, discuss it, talk to your friends and neighbors, use July 4th not as an opportunity to eat bad hot dogs and get drunk, but to take seriously what it was historically that occurred on that period leading up to July 4th and then the Revolutionary War afterwards,
mm-hmm.
that this was the moment where there was a decisive break with an oligarchy. And that oligarchy is still in power globally. It controls the White House. It controls a lot of the way people think through the media. Not that a lot of people don't agree with the media, but they're shaped by their sense of victimization and inability to act. Now is the time to act. And Jeff, we have about 2 minutes. Just summarize, if you will, the importance of this moment.
We're at a strategic breakpoint. The one element that didn't come up during the discussion with Professor Boyle is the fact that the driving motive for all of this push for war is the fact that the current financial system, the British system of global financial dictatorship by a private oligarchy, has reached a breakpoint. The symbol of that breakpoint is the move from bailout to bail-in. And we're seeing that bail-in process now with the court action in New York in the case of Argentina, that a very small number of vulture funds are being given the authority to grab up national assets on the basis of an illegal, unconstitutional process. So it's the British system that is on its death throes, and the danger is that before going down and submitting to a global reorganization along American system principles, that they will go for war. And they've got a perfect tool in the White House in the form of President Obama to push all of that. And the danger here is that that is exactly where we are headed. The president today sent word to Congress that he's not going to Congress for authorization to use force in Iraq, but will go ahead and do it on his own. He's also made clear to the Europeans that he wants provocations directed against Russia in the form of new sanctions, despite the fact that President Putin has made a number of important gestures to de-escalate the crisis in Ukraine. So we're at a moment where the danger of war is greatly heightened. As Professor Boyle said, you've got three tinderbox situations: Russia, Ukraine, Middle East, and U.S. confrontation with China under the air-sea battle Asia pivot. So the only way you're going to deal with this problem in a timely fashion is Obama's removal and then the immediate implementation of the four new principles, new laws that can be enacted with the stroke of a pen to go back to traditional American system methods and start the ball rolling for an economic recovery that will steamroll into the greatest period of prosperity here in this country and around the world that's ever been seen. It's
and,
at
and
a breakpoint.
All
break
the material
point.
That you're talking about is available on the LaRouche Pack website, LaRouchePack.com, and people should download it. And this should be your discussion topic around the July 4th holiday. Jeff, we have run out of time. I want to thank you for joining us today, and again, our thanks to Professor Francis Boyle. And those of you listening to this program who want to move on this, you can go to the archives for the LaRouche Show and play this interview with Professor Boyle to your friends. Let's make sure that we don't miss the opportunity now because we may not have another one. So, Jeff, thanks a lot, and we'll be back with you next Saturday, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, for another edition of the LaRouche Show.
Thanks, Hurley.